This podcast is brought to you by the Albany Public Library Main Branch and the generosity of listeners like you.
What is a podcast?
God, Daddy, these people talk as much as you do.
Razib Khan's Unsupervised Learning.
You know that genetics plays a huge role in our health, and more people are using genetic testing to determine risk for diseases like cancer for themselves and their kids than ever before. So I want to tell you about ORCID. It's the only company that does whole genome testing for embryos, testing before your child is born. If you're doing IVF, this is a clear choice now, because now you can reduce risk for thousands of single gene disorders, including heritable forms of autism, pediatric cancers, and birth defects. Check them out at orchidhealth.com.
All right, everybody. This is Razib here for Unsupervised Learning Podcast. And, sometimes they say, guest needs no introduction. But for those of you who have listened to this podcast, Sam Obrea probably does need no introduction. He has been here multiple times, and his podcasts are actually very popular. This is why he's been on this podcast multiple times. I give the people what they want. Sambo is the principal behind Bismarck Analysis, and he has a newsletter that's really great. You should check that out. And also, he's heading the editorial board of Palladium Magazine, which is also great. I've contributed several times to Palladium. And there's a lot of interesting things in there. And I guess, before we go into some follow-ups on, Sam, we've been talking on this podcast for, it's been since the fall of 2020, our first conversation. And so, a lot has changed in the world, a lot will change in the world. There's a lot of update on that for the listeners. But I want to talk about Palladium. Palladium, for those of you who do not know, there's long form, I don't know if you say journalism, but they're essays about the world and the future and the past. And, I've written on some genomics and genetic stuff for them, obviously, what I know about. But there's other great stuff in there. There's a recent one about Portugal and its future, which is very interesting. And, the people who write for Palladium, I would say they're definitely big think people, big think guys and girls. Associated, Grimes, is a big fan. For those of you who know music. And so there's a cultural aspect to it that I think is also interesting. Before we go on, I just want to ask you, how do you see Palladium's project up to now? How do you see Palladium's project going forward, since you're the primary captain of the ship right now?
Yes, that's correct. Palladium Magazine is truly a unique project. It's San Francisco based, but it's unsurprisingly very different from the San Francisco groupthink. I think it's actually very helpful to be in a place that's very intelligent, that needs new and different voices, right? Something that's outside of, let's say, the normal partisan consensus. Because you can go around the country and you can find super Democratic Party outlets, super Republican Party outlets, but almost no one is rethinking the future from first principles. And I really think Palladium Magazine's achieves this. If you look back in the 1990s and so on, occasionally Wired would have pieces like this. So if you wanted to call it early Wired, you could. But as you pointed out, there's a bigger cultural aspect to it, right? We've had pieces such as the, Natalia Deshan piece, Free Speech Isn't the Real Problem at Yale, right? Or The Lost Virtue of Skull and Bones. These are long form pieces written by people themselves who have had experience of Ivy League universities. And what's the problem there? There have been pieces like David Oakes, who went to Afghanistan after the Taliban takeover. And that was a classic long form journalism piece. Perhaps you could compare that to early Vice. But there's no real comparison, right? It's one of a kind. The tagline is governance futurism. Why? Because, the future of governance, government, technology, society, culture, it's up in the air. We're all operating off of these basically 20th century stereotypes. What does really, liberalism or conservatism or even 1960s environmentalism have left to say about the world of 2024? I don't think very much. And that's why people come up with these stopgap answers and solutions. Like in response to AI, right? You might have people warm up utilitarian philosophy and call it effective altruism. Or people might warm up 1990s techno-utopianism and call it effective accelerationism. Again, totally reactive names, right? Almost this kind of dialectic for the sake of dialectic. You know, Palladium's not in dialectic with anyone. It's not opposed to anyone. It rethinks things from the first principle, from the ground up. Each issue, it is a quarterly print magazine. The print quality is very high quality. Since the point of a physical artifact in 2024, it's not that you really sell pieces of paper and that's how you fund thoughts. No, no. A physical Palladium is a token of membership, right? It means you are a supporter of this effort that, again, because of the changed economics of the internet, has to be this sort of a non-profit entity, right? And it has to fulfill this cultural mission. The benefit of that, though, is that there are no ads on the magazine itself. The website is freely available for the public benefit. Writers, you know, get to really deeply develop their thoughts when they pursue them. If people are reporting on what they've experienced in Xinjiang in China or, in Afghanistan or, ultimately at Yale, all of these places I mentioned have their own brand of extremism and their own brand of anthropology you get to do by reporting on the experiences there. There's no real party line to follow. And I have found this project something unique, remarkable. I've been, friends with Wolf Tivey, the founding editor-in-chief, still currently editor-at-large for a very long time. I've donated both time and money. I served on, the board of the nonprofit. And now I'm finding it immensely intellectually stimulating and gratifying to be active in this editorial role I've taken up. So for Palladium, the last issue was titled Silicon Nemesis, and that one featured an interview with Grimes. Grimes also featured on the cover. You don't often get someone reaching out to artists who are actually very well-informed, as she uniquely is, on the state of technology, and hearing their opinion of the future. And, say issue 07, which came out in 2022, was titled Garden Planet, where the whole issue was more than just a collection of essays on the topic of environmentalism. It presented this new synthesis, this idea that for modern industrial civilization to thrive, it's neither conservationism nor ignoring the environment. Neither is the right approach. The right approach would be to re-engineer nature to match up with our society. So both our society and our industrial stack changes, but we also actually just take active management. And, I've not really seen anyone argue or write for this. A few years ago when Palladium ran the article, how, ancient upheavals show how we can re-engineer the climate, right? Geoengineering articles, let alone pro-geoengineering articles, were very rare. So part of Palladium's mission is to bring ideas into, a very highbrow form, present them to a serious audience of supporters, of technologists, sometimes of policymakers, and have it be sleek, have it be sexy, have it be beautiful in a way that, that makes you experience this future, this novel vision, right? This is why every single Palladium has custom, unique artwork. We work with Asimov Collective, but also other visual artists. And I think this unique combination makes it a great platform and a great exploration of future visions of the world.
Yeah, one thing it reminds me of, and I've been reading Palladium for a while. Just it shows up. People in my circle recommend it. And also, some of these articles, these pieces are extremely long, extremely deep. You don't really find it. So how am I going to say this? Because a lot of the listeners will not have experience with Palladium. Check out the website. The stuff is free. But, there are academic articles that are extremely long, but extremely dense and abstruse. And then there are the short, like, think pieces that you find in, I don't know, you used to find in the New Republic or National Review, etc. And Palladium, I would say a lot of the Palladium essays are a little hybridized for that because the audience is not narrowly academic. It's broadly intellectual but interested. But they're extremely long and they go really deep, which usually, you know, the 500 words to 1,000, which is what you see in a lot of publications, like, you know, intellectual publications that are not aimed at academia, you know, they can't go that deeply. And I remember, like, a National Review, a conservative publication, which I've written for sometimes, but, you know, in the 1980s, they used to have these advertisements where Tom Selleck would say, I read National Review because, you know, I find things in National Review that I can't find anywhere else, you know? And I think that that's, to be candid, that's much more appropriate for Palladium today. You know, I like National Review, but, you know what National Review's perspective is. Yes. It has a range of writers, but it's kind of a thin band. And also, or not thin, but it's like, you know, there's a band, there's a range. And also in terms of, like, the volume and the length, again, there's, you know, the print magazine has some longer pieces. Palladium, though, you know, has these, like, very long pieces that you give your writers room to run, and you don't know where they're going to run sometimes. That's my impression.
Yes. I mean, very much it is the case that we are all now communicating in cliches, right? All the problems of clickbait journalism of the early 2000s, let alone the sort of, like, intellectual decline of quality that you see in academia. Like, read an academic paper on anything related to culture, sociology, economics, anthropology. It's just really bad. It's gotten really bad. The average product is unreadable. They don't usually say anything new. And so between these two extremes, I feel the intellectual machinery that our society needs to be able to process information, to be able to do thought, that's completely missing. So what is open, and a niche that I think Palladium fills well, is giving people space to both explore and develop strong theses, theses that don't necessarily fit in a tweet, but that will fit into, let's say, a 4,000 or 5,000 word essay. Now, of course, you cannot torture your reader. This is why you have to have the editing transform the writing. If someone has an amazing idea, but they've not yet really written a piece of this length, they might actually lack the skill. And a lot of what we do is have the editors work very closely with some of these new writers to teach them how to write a high quality long form piece. I would honestly compare the process very similar to what The New Yorker does. It's very high on editorial effort, but the gift both to, you know, to the community of our readers and supporters, but the broader information ecosystem, is that people learn to write. And then a lot of these writers who are first-time Palladium writers have gone on to write for other publications, everything from, you know, American Affairs to Politico Europe to founding their own magazines, like Jennifer Davis founded the Miami Native, for example. And, you know, she first wrote for Palladium magazine. And this sort of extended network of writers and creators, it can only form if you get that first break, if you get that first chance, right? So talent scouting's part of the mission. Part of the mission is writing stuff that is beautiful, because at every single point, the easiest thing in the world for a reader to do is stop reading, right? And to get the payoff, the true payoff that can't be packed into a tweet of, how do I change my mind about global warming? What is geoengineering? What does it mean philosophically? What are the political barriers? Is it even technically possible? Come on, if you've never thought about this, you have to read this. You have to read a long-form article. And the combination, I think, of a new model of the world together with this sort of, let's call it contemplative, dynamic, refined aesthetic, this makes it enjoyable. It makes it fun. You have to make intellectual culture not just accessible. You have to make it something that people want to be a part of. In a very fundamental way, This is something I think we've lost in the Western world, right? In the 19th century, you had these super active reading groups. Like, you know, today we'd call them book clubs, but what does it mean to have a book club and like read a Barnes & Noble book? It kind of doesn't mean anything, right? Compare this to, let's say, like a group of like 15 or 20 close friends reading books that none of their peers ever read, you know, maybe getting themselves into an extreme philosophy or two, like you're 19th century Russian, you're in a book club, you know, maybe you end up being an anarchist, or maybe you end up thinking about weird transhumanist thoughts. And, you know, actually there was a fun